Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. And you know what? The third Thursday in November is a special time for winemakers. And we're going to find out why that's the case from our guest today, Philippe Coquart, a winemaker at the award-winning Wollersheim Winery and Distillery in Prairie du Sac, Wisconsin. Philippe is originally from the Beaujolais region of France and comes from a winemaking family. And he's been producing a lot of really good wines and spirits now as well. And so it's always great to have him stop by to talk about winemaking and wine and grapes and spirits. What would you like to know about the whole process? Questions for him about the process, maybe about selecting wines, maybe about grapes. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Philippe, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Good morning, Larry. My pleasure.
Well, the third Thursday of November is a special date for wine lovers.
Yeah, absolutely. And that tradition started a long time ago in Beaujolais, which is where I grew up. And in that region, we grow Gamay grape, which is very suited to make a light, fresh, fruity, vibrant, grapey wine. And wine is released and celebrated, enjoyed throughout the world that third Thursday of November. So when I came on board here 34 years ago, my father-in-law, Bob Wollersheim, asked me to continue the tradition and make a wine like I would in Beaujolais, and that's how we came up with the Ruby Nouveau and a Beaujolais style Nouveau.
Has the tradition changed much over the years?
Not really. It's been going on for 30, 40 years, 50 years, and it's a fun time. It's really the celebration of the vintage. You know, the grapes are hanging on the vine in September. We pick the grapes, make the wine. And it is the first wine of that vintage to be released. And as a winemaker, it's a way of getting together, celebrating, sharing stories about the past harvest, and there's always some good food that goes with it.
And how are you? Well, so you'll be doing all of that.
We will be tapping our little barrel of Ruby Nouveau Thursday at noon. Between 12 and 12:30, so we will have a lot of guests. We every year, you know, we started with a couple dozen guests, and then and now it's a couple hundred, 300, and it's a great time. You know, it's talking about the vintage, the growing season, and so on.
So Beaujolais Nouveau is made with the whole fruit.
Yes, it's a special kind of fermentation. You know, when we talk Cab, Zin, Merlot, Pinot Noir, the grapes are usually crushed, and the wine is fermented on the skin for a couple of weeks. In Beaujolais, to make a Beaujolais Nouveau, we do not crush the berries. So it's a more of a lighter, fruitier, it's called a Beaujolais fermentation, semi-carbonic fermentation, and it makes a wine lighter, fruitier, and it's only fermented for about a week on the skin.
But it really tastes great.
Nice. And it, you know, not every wine can be big and muscle, round shoulder, like a Zin or a Cab. Not every wine is fitted or suited to be that way. So a light, fresh, fruity sometimes is refreshing.
I would agree. Our guest today, Philippe Coquart of Wollersheim Winery and Distillery in Prairie du Sac, our guest. Questions or comments for him, give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And what kind of grapes do you use in the Ruby Nouveau?
Actually, we use a grape that Bob replanted in 1972 called Maréchal Foch, which is a French-American hybrid that was developed in Alsace. That was prior to the days of discovering all the Wisconsin hybrids, which have become extremely popular, such as Marquette, Petite Pearl, Frontenac, and so on. So 30, 40 years ago, all we had was the Maréchal Foch, and it works really great for that wine.
Yeah, is that a difficult grape to grow?
No, actually, Maréchal Foch grows extremely well from Minnesota to Michigan, New York State, and Wisconsin. We have 30 acres of grapes on site, and our biggest acreage is that Foch grape.
Oh, man. And how did the vines do this year? Speaking of, just talking about grapes.
It was a challenging year with the rain. We've never seen rain like that. When we talk rain, we are on slopes, so we don't get the flood like so many people were affected by. In terms of growing season, it is tough to ripen grapes when it's cloudy and raining all the time. So, the beauty of it is that it's a farm product. It reflects the growing season. And as a winemaker, we just let it be what it wants to be rather than tweak it, doctor it, change it. So is it a great vintage? No, it's okay. Hopefully we drink it fast and forget about it.
I wondered if we had snow in April. I wondered if that had any effect.
The year started wet and snow in April, and we had rain May, June, July, and it never quit, So thank God for the picking machine, because we can really time the picking as we wish and as we want. So
we had one other thing that relates, well, I guess it relates to the weather in some ways, but we get a lot of people calling and saying, what am I going to do about these Japanese beetles that are creating a problem? And I know Japanese beetles are particularly a problem, or can be, on grapes.
Oh yeah, they love grapes, they love rose bushes, they love us. For us it's more a matter of aesthetic, because they are not affecting the big photosynthesis captor. They are chewing the top of the vine. It doesn't look great. We do spray insecticide. The key to catch them is between 3 and 4 o'clock in the afternoon. If you spray at 10 a.m., some of the population is not out yet. So you would have to do multiple spray, and that's not the thing to do. I'd rather do one or two spray and be done with it. It's a matter of a threshold. If you have 2 bugs per vine, don't worry about it. If you have 25 bugs per vine and you are defoliating, then
there's something
a problem.
Has to be done. Yeah. Well, let's take a call. Matthew in La Crosse, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm calling about the Beaujolais that you're talking about. I'm not a big fancy wine drinker, but one of the things that I really did like when I started drinking Beaujolais Nouveau is how sweet and much more flavorful it was compared to the, the more expensive wines that you buy. It just seems like it's more refreshing. And the other question I wanted to ask is, the wine that the gentleman makes there, is that sold in my area?
You're in La Crosse. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes, we do. We distribute Wolosham wine and spirit throughout Wisconsin, and La Crosse is a big market for us, so you should be able to find the Ruby Nouveau all the way in La Crosse. One thing you could do is call the winery, VIP Wine, and they can give you a listing of the stores in the La Crosse area. And the difference, the comment you made about the Ruby Nouveau or Beaujolais Nouveau being lighter and fresher, it's because they are fermented not as long, meaning 7-8 days. The longer you ferment, the more extraction you get of the tannin. So that's how you get a big red full of tannin, and it's not as light, refreshing.
Mm, there you go. Matthew, does that help out?
That helps me a lot, and I'm going to be looking for your product and probably enjoying a bottle as soon as it
it's on the market.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Are those bottles on the market, or when do the bottles come out on the market?
I think, let's see, Wednesday afternoon, Thursday, they should be everywhere. So throughout, the distributor picked it up this morning, and they will be starting to place it in stores and restaurants throughout Wisconsin.
All right, so there you go, Matthew. Thanks so much for calling. You don't have to wait long to get a bottle of Wallersheim's Ruby Nouveau. Oh, man. You know, you're known for your wine, of course, but you've also added distilled spirits, and I want to get to that. As we talk with you today, but many of your wines have won national awards.
Yeah, and actually this year with the dry Riesling won one of the best white wine in the nation, and that was a very prestigious competition in California. Mm-hmm. So we are very very happy. It is rewarding to see all the accolades and medals. And you know, sometimes in business, the fear is to get too big too fast. Well, we've been at this for 46 years. Yeah. So, you know, we have experience on what's good and what's not. So.
Mary in New London, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I am wondering about how long you can age certain wines. I'm a big red drinker, but I know that cabs usually are better the longer you wait to drink them. But kind of in the long lines of Merlots and a Shiraz, how long can I wait till I really need to drink that?
You know what? We are going to answer that question, Mary, and I'm going to let Philippe ponder it a little bit because we need to take a look at the news here. But you stay with us here, Mary, and Philippe Coquart will have some answers about how long you can wait or how long you should wait to drink those wines. Philippe Coquart, our guest winemaker at the award-winning Wallersheim Winery and Distillery in Prairie du Sac, Wisconsin. We'll take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with Philippe. Stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, talking about wine and grapes, and we'll get into spirits as well with our guest Philippe Coquart, a winemaker at the award-winning Wallersheim Winery and Distillery in Prairie du Sac. So, as we visit with him, what questions do you have? I hope you'll join in, be it about growing grapes, about drinking wine, about anything connected with spirits. I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Mary in New London, are you still with us? Mary, are you there?
I am. Yeah.
So you're interested in how long you can wait, or should you wait before drinking a bottle of wine?
Is correct.
That, yeah.
So, Mary, the easiest way to go at this is kind of a price point. Anything under $12 a bottle should not be kept for aging a long time. Anything under $12, you have a couple years to enjoy those red wines. And I say a couple, I really mean two and not five. But when you are in the 18, $20, $25 price range, I would say 3 to 5 years. If you are in the 25 to 75. Here you're talking serious aging. And I would say those wine above the $25 price point should age 10 years to 15 years. One thing to remember, the aging is the life of the cork. And the cork will not have that long, not as long as we used to think. So 15 years to 20 years is plenty of aging for a wine to have grown, developed, mature. My best advice is 5 to 10 years is a great, great wine.
There you go, Mary. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. You know, you were talking about the cork, and Mike in Castle Rock has a question that relates right to that. So let's go there. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Yes, I've got Chateau Lafite, a lot of early wines here, and some of the corks aren't looking good. And you know, if you get oxygen inside there, it'll kill the wine. So could you talk a bit about, recorking the wine?
Yeah, and that's a great question, and it's exactly what I was alluding to. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, the cork guys, for many years, we thought a cork would last as long as the wine. But no, it is not a new discovery, but a cork is 15 years, and it's maybe time to recork. So recorking is not that easy. A specialty store will do it under a nitrogen, in a nitrogen chamber, so the wine does not oxidize. We've never done that for our wine or our customer. I would advise you to check online and see. And if you are really stuck, let me know. I could help you. But there are some special store that and special equipment that will recork old vintages.
And it sounds like you've got some old ones there and maybe some valuable wines there.
Yeah, it sounds like what you have, sir, Mike, is they are very worthy of being recorked.
Hello?
Yes.
Does that hold true for ports, too? I've got ports back to the 60s.
No, a port will not... quote-unquote get hurt by a quote-unquote bad cork. You do not have to recork port wine.
All right.
Good. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, that's something you just don't want to pull the old cork and put in a new one yourself.
No, it's not that easy. And some people are specializing in that with the right equipment and especially under nitrogen, so you do not oxidize the wine.
Yeah. Thanks again, Mike. Appreciate it. You can join in too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions, wine or spirits. Love to hear from you. William in Milwaukee, let's go to you next. Hi, William.
Hello there.
What's on your mind today?
Well, I'm actually a bit of a home brewer, and I actually do a lot of experimentation with meads, sizers, and non-grape wines myself. And I was just curious if you had any tips for beginners, since, well, I'm not exactly one. I always try and encourage people to get into the, you know, home brewing, you know, experience.
Sure.
You know, it's really easy and rather simple. Even without human intervention, grape juice will start fermenting, but it's easier if you control it and helping to go along. You know, crushing grapes into a food grade container, or to not say a garbage can, adding some yeast and letting it go as wine, that's pretty much the ABC. A couple of the things you need to watch for is, it's nice if you have a way of measuring sugar content, and if you want a nice red wine, 22-23% sugar content will give you about 12% of alcohol. You ferment it, let it ferment, and every other day you move the tub around, or what we call do a punch down. So you mix the cap and the liquid, let it ferment, and I would say after 8-9 days, all the sugar became alcohol. You sieve it through a cheesecloth, press it if you have a little press, and then put it all in a cowboy glass plastic jug. Let it ferment for another week, and it will settle down. And I would say by Christmas time or by next March, you have a wine that you can enjoy.
Yeah, there you go, William. Does that help?
I would say so. Thanks for the new recipe to try out.
Thanks.
Right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. And we'll take some more calls here. Let's go. Peter just joining us now. Hi, Peter.
Hi there.
What's on your mind?
So I have a question regarding bottle sealing wax. And just curious to see if that, in fact, does really help with the aging process and oxidation and not allowing the cork to maybe decay. Or I know it's kind of a neat look, too. I'm also in the company of wax with a company in Oshkosh that sells bottle sealing wax. I'm just hearing if you guys would have any comments on that.
Mm-hmm. Great question, Peter. It's a matter of fact that we have decided to no longer use wax for many reasons. One, and maybe your wax is different, but one of the main reasons is wax is really difficult to peel out of the top of a bottle. All the restaurants hate wax because it falls on the carpet and it's hard to clean. And for the wait staff, it's really hard to deal with at table presentation. And our own issue with wax on the Domaine Reserve and the ice wine, we have discovered that it does not let the cork dry. And the cork is very spongy and moist. And quite often when you put the corkscrew through the cork, it comes out all soft and spongy. So as of last year, we have stopped dipping the Domaine Reserve and the ice wine in wax, and we are going with a tin capsule, very traditional, the way it used to be done 30, 40, 50 years ago. That's about all I can tell you about the wax. Does it lengthen aging? Possibly, but at a cost of hurting the cork. We are doing without.
There you go, Peter. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, this whole business about cork and screw tops, I think there was, because of some of the wines I might have drunk when I was in college, most of them had screw tops on them. And so there was those are not such good wines if they're screw tops, but that's changed a lot.
It totally, completely changed. And you're right, Larry, that was a cliche of anything with a twist-up cork was cheap and bad. And that is no longer the case. We, out of 1.3 million bottles, we have well over a million a screw cap, and I tell you what, those are the bottles we never hear about because it's smooth. The seal between the glass and that little disc underneath the cap is by far the best closure there is. It is better than a natural cork. There is no oxygen coming into the bottle, no oxidation, no loss of sulfite. The product stays fresh longer and better. Why natural cork? Tradition, expectation, price point. They have their place. We use a lot of them. But screw cap ultimately is a better closure than any other cork.
And cork itself, I know there was concern, and now you're seeing, too, some cork-like Or it looks like cork, but it isn't cork in some bottles.
And actually, those, what I would advise to stay away from is the plastic imitation cork. Those are not known to be good for the wine in terms of losing flavor and oxidizing. However, there are some composite cork that look like compressed sawdust. Those are, we Fine. Call them high-tech cork, and they are very, very good corks.
So a little careful to, but I didn't realize that there were composite cork out there now. That makes a lot of sense.
And it, actually, in some ways, they are better than a cheap natural cork. One of the main cork problem is what we call TCA, is that cork taint. Mm-hmm. And it's not happening as much as it used to, so the corks have cleaned up nicely.
Philippe Coquart, our guest from Wallersheim Winery. Great to have him along. And if you have a question for him, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions and comments. You have, you're releasing now your Coquart Reserve Brandy. So we should, let's talk about your spirits a little bit here.
Yeah, so very exciting product. It is what we call the Cognac of Wisconsin. It is made with Wisconsin native grapes, La Crosse, St. Pepin, La Crescent. So those grapes were bred and discovered in Wisconsin. And so we grow lots of those grapes. We have a lot of growers growing grapes for us for the brandy. It is aged 5 years in Wisconsin oak barrels. And actually, we have logs harvested in Reedsburg, made into staves. The staves are seasoned on site at the winery and the distillery. And when we need barrels, we ship pallets of staves and get custom-made barrels for us. So we have a very extensive program of using Wisconsin oak and Wisconsin ingredient, and that is really what the distillery spirit, outside way, is built about local grains, local botanical, Wisconsin oak, and that 5-year-old brandy is very much comparable to a cognac.
Yeah, and it's be looking forward to tasting that and trying that out myself. The you know, the whole process of local farmers, you're working with local, you've got trees that were grown here in Wisconsin, and then your own business. I mean, it's all, you hire local people, your whole family's involved.
Absolutely. And, you know, for us, 45 years we've been at this, it's total transparency. And, I mean, we can disclose anything of where the grapes are grown, who grows them, by whom and where, which barrels, and so on. And you're right. My son-in-law, Tom, is the distiller. My daughter, Celine, is with me as the lab tech in the wine. We have one son in France studying culinary school, and eventually we'll have food service at the winery. The youngest son is not quite sure yet, but, and you know, we have a crew that has been with us 23 years. They are part of the family. You know, it's a big, great team, and all we do, you talked about the medals, it can't happen without a great team like we have. So
yeah, I bet that is true. Ted and Spooner has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Ted.
Yeah, hello. I've tried a lot of different types of wines. Cranberry wine was the hardest, and they said to add chalk to it, the same as hibiscus flower petals that are dried and make wine on. That tastes really good, but had one batch of work, one didn't, and then they said to add chalk to it, and I'd done that too. But how much does it take to taste away when you start doing stuff like that?
Well, so in the cranberry, the concept or the idea of adding chalk is to cut the acidity, and they are. That's one thing that we don't, quote-unquote, monkey with or deal with, because When you do the chalk treatment, it's hit and miss. I would much rather advise you to add more sugar, increase the alcohol content, and have some sweetness to quote-unquote minimize or cover the acidity. Alcohol is a great sweetener on its own, so a cranberry wine, if you were to bring the bricks to 24, 25, you would have 13, 14% of alcohol. With some back sweetness, you hardly need to deal with the acidity. The alcohol and the sweetness will take care of the acidity. Hibiscus, I do not know anything about it. So I would not venture there.
All right. Thanks, Dad. Appreciate it. Ron in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Ron.
Yes, I have a couple questions. The first question is, you talk about having to replace the cork once a bottle has been initially opened, but doesn't laying the bottle of wine that's been opened on its side, the wine will soak into the bottle and the cork and cause it to swell, which prevents oxidation. The other question is, I've heard that in the French vineyards, they always plant their wine vines for making wine in poor soil, so the vines have to struggle more, and it seems to instill a better grape or more flavor when they ferment the grapes.
Yes, so let's talk about the grapes and where they grown on poor soil. Yes, grapes grown on poor soil will make better wine, and the reason being is less vigor. Less vigor is more sunlight penetrating into the grapevine, more ripening, more flavor, thicker skin, and so on. So it's poor soil is good. It's good because it has less nitrogen, less vigor, less water, and the vines are struggling a little bit. What we have to be careful is to not hurt the vine, because we want the vine to ripen the cluster and make the best possible wine. So that is the reason why poor soil is better. On the bottle, the replacement of the cork is, if it needs to be done, and the replacement of the cork would be on a 15-year-old $200-$300 bottle of wine if you haven't enjoyed it. One advice is, do not overdo it. Make sure you are the wine enjoying the wine and not your kids. So, you know, if a bottle has been aged for 12, 15 years, it's time to be enjoyed. The cork, the bottle laying on down on its side to keep the cork moist is good, and you need to do that. The last thing you want to do is have a bottle standing up for 5 years and the cork shrink and the wine is oxidized.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. By the way, Kurt in Poinette has a 2011 bottle of Domaine Reserve. How can he expect it to taste when he opens it for Thanksgiving in a couple of weeks?
It's one of our best vintage. Enjoy it. What I would suggest you do is bring the bottle up like right now. If there are any sediment, let them fall down to the bottom. Take the wax out, take the cork out, decant the bottle, and let it breathe for 20 minutes, half an hour at very most, and enjoy it. 2011, 2009 are some of our best vintages, with 2017 when we released that Domaine Reserve. The more sun, the more dryness, the better the vintages.
There you go. Thanks so much for that question. And your event on Thursday, is everybody invited to that? Or?
Yeah, it is totally open to the public for between noon and 12:30. And we have cheese and sausage. And so it is a public event for the Ruby Novo, as well as Vintage Christmas, November 24th. That event is, we advise people to take tickets because it gets really crowded. So buy tickets online. So that's the best.
And just go to Wallersheim.
Wallersheim.com.
Wallersheim.com. Philippe, thank you so much. And thanks also for your support of business support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Really appreciate that as well. Philippe Coquard, our guest today, the winemaker at the award-winning Wallersheim Winery and Distillery in Prairie du Sac, Wisconsin. Great to have him along. He'll be back. We'll do it again. Tomorrow, we'll talk about the Great Lakes and what part of the water, they hold will play as we face worldwide water shortages. That's at 11:45. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.